What is up, you loggerheads? Welcome to No Holds Barred. Before we launch it, I'm going to hit you up with the word of the week. This is where we take a word that is Shakespearean, off-putting, confusing, troubling, makes you hate Shakespeare when you read it for the first time because you have no idea what it means. Break it down, tell you what it means, and then try to sneak it past Kevin in whatever way I feel like I want to this week during the podcast. This week, the word of the week is loggerhead. Loggerhead. A noun? L-O-G-G-E-R-H-E-A-D. Meaning blockhead, numbskull, or dolt. This week's word of the week goes out to the patron saint of all loggerheads, Ryan Higgins.
Here we go. 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. This week we'll gaze, drop rhymes so tight we become immortal, and share a really cool idea we have about a new collaboration we have in place. Oh. Oh, apparently the public is going to do that now. Okay. Oh, well. Anyways, let's duel. In the duel, we choose three questions at the intersection of Shakespeare and the present day and take 45-ish seconds to hash out the best answer. I won the coin flip before the show, and I've elected to go first, so here we go. Question number one comes from Pat Hopp, who emailed us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com to ask, in leadership conferences, Henry V is frequently cited as a great example of a strong leader. If a keynote speaker wanted to mix things up, who else in the canon could they use instead? So I think, you know, Henry V is the logical onboarding choice with,
right,
you know, once more into the breach and all that. So I wanted to have, you're not going to be able to find someone who's like a, I mean, you could find. I'm not interested in finding a diet Henry V.
Okay.
Like, same thing, just not as interesting.
Sure.
So I'm going to go with Albany from King Lear, because Albany is in a position where he knows what is happening, what he has been sent to do is wrong.
Sure.
And does what he can within his realm to change it. You know, and at the end of the play, he is now the second or in charge of the kingdom, and he's the only one who fights for what's right night after night, compared to, I guess, I mean, at court.
Sure, because at the end of the play, he basically defers, right? He's like, no, yes, Edgar, you can have it.
Because he's a good leader.
Interesting.
It's not, I don't know, whatever. It made more sense when I wrote it down.
Well, I feel like I'm going to win this one. This is great. I'm going to go with, if you can't get the son, take the dad. I'll take Henry IV.
Okay.
I actually think he displays a lot of great leadership, even in the way that he brings up Henry to become Henry V.
Mm-hmm.
The way that in some of those scenes they have together, the advice he gives Henry. He gives Henry his whole plan. He's like, I'm dying, but here's what you need to do. You need to declare war and get out of England as fast as possible, go to France, and basically like gives him the master plan to become Henry V.
Right.
He also has, if you can track him from Bolingbroke into becoming Henry IV, he becomes the king. He takes away from someone else, basically through the way that he manipulates the crowds, and that they are like pumped to see him. So I think that he just displays really good leadership qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like, if you can't get GW, just get George Bush Sr.
Okay. It's a diet Henry V, I guess. That's fine. Question number two.
Like, that's a Henry V Max. Pepsi Max.
Zero. Question number two. Charlene Smith, who is at Charlene V. Smith on Twitter, tweeted us to ask, if you had to pick one Shakespeare play to vote off the island that could never be performed again, what would you pick? Daniel.
Yes. I would love to pick All's Well That Ends Well.
Okay. Deeply personal choice.
Deeply personal choice. I just don't think the play has a lot to offer,
mm-hmm,
as witnessed by the fact that we couldn't come up with a moral that was really that great.
Mm-hmm.
We would never have to answer that question. Mm-hmm. We could go back and delete that episode, or at least that part of the episode,
mm-hmm.
because it would be voted off the island. I just feel like the play doesn't do a lot for me. Mm-hmm. It's not one that I'm dying to see. The only reason I would go see a production is because I'd be like, oh, wow, someone's doing this play.
Right, why?
Like, I wonder what they're up to.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go with All's Well That Ends Well, Off the Island.
All right. Never gave me pause here. Never, 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 never. But the one that I'm going to vote off the island is Taming of the Shrew. And I'll tell you why. Because I think in the current climate, there's really no way... when they did it at Shakespeare in the Park a couple of years ago, like there was this great note from that Oscar Eustace wrote where he was like, this is the only Shakespeare play I've never touched because I don't know what to do with this. I don't feel comfortable dealing with it. And so it's like you're already, regardless of who you are, you're boxed in. You're fighting uphill against that burden of a play that you need to make work in a way that's really hard for a contemporary audience to get over some of the challenges of that play.
Okay.
So every production I think the majority of productions, like, that's going to be the focus of the production is, this play doesn't work, but here's how we're going to fix it.
Interesting.
So let's just not.
Is that something that you don't think will ever change? Like, you don't think, like, 70 years from now, they'd be like, oh, Taming of the Shrew speaks to us.
It may be.
Okay.
But I have to vote someone off right now, and Henry VIII doesn't exist, so Taming of the Shrew. Question number three, Miranda Bishop brings another hard-hitting duel question to our inbox at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. She writes, which three Shakespearean characters would you want on your team in a post-apocalyptic survival scenario? These are the hard questions.
I like this one
so
very much.
I want to assemble a squad that's going to keep me alive in this zombie scenario and theoretically start a new world together.
Yes.
So I'm going to take the first person on my team is Guiderius from Cymbeline, which is definitely the one I want this time.
The hockey player?
No, the other one.
Okay.
He's a forager. He's dangerous. He can throw down, and he's unceasingly loyal.
Yep.
Then I'm going to take John Talbot from Henry VI, Part 1.
Okay.
Huge dude, strong,
yep.
Can lift things.
Yep.
Very dangerous.
Yes.
Unfailingly loyal.
Okay, I'm sensing a theme.
And then for the third person, I'm going to take Rosalind from As You Like It.
All right.
She's comfortable out in the woods.
Yep.
Not afraid to get dirty. Clever.
Short.
And a babe.
Total babe.
So that's who I'm restarting the world with, and I'm going to be the disloyal one.
Solid crew. Similarly, I'm looking for a group that can help me stay alive and also repopulate the world.
Right.
So, with that in mind, I'm taking Ariel from The Tempest. Because it can do like really fast and really awesomely.
Yeah.
And I mean, awesome to have like a spirit. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Othello.
Okay.
From Othello. Strong. Can actually like get us on a boat around the world if we need to get to the water, mm-hmm. has some experience in the water,
mm-hmm.
A warrior,
mm-hmm.
but also is a great storyteller and mm-hmm. can help be a part of like remembering the old world through oral tradition, that witchcraft that he uses.
Survival is insufficient type of thing.
Absolutely. And then I will repopulate with Lady Macbeth.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think it would just be a great sex life.
But Jesus. If you make it through the other side... Like a praying mantis.
No, I just also think she's incredibly strong.
Smart.
And, you know, she is smart, wily. And I think the world of Macbeth is probably the closest thing to post-apocalypse in the canon that I can think of. Not that she makes it out, but she does some pretty serious damage in the meantime.
Yeah, she makes it count. She's comfortable in that until... She's not.
So Othello, Ariel, and Lady Mac are my crew.
All right. There you go, folks. That is how we duel. If you have a question you'd like to see featured in a future edition of The Duel, please send it our way. We are at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Patreon at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. We are on Twitter at noholdsbardcast. And we are on Facebook at facebook.com. No Holds Barred Cast. Daniel.
Yes!
Shall we do some homework?
Yes, please.
Mortals, perchance you wonder at this show, but wonder on till truth makes all things plain.
This is the part of the program where I pull a Shakespearean homework question from the internet, and Dan and I do our best to pull together a coherent answer, no matter how stupid the question or how pressing the deadline. This episode's question comes from Redditor Cool12Y.
How are we spelling cool? How are we spelling cool?
C-O-O-L.
Darn.
Cool as a cucumber. Under the heading, Doubts in Not Marble Nor the Gilded Mountains.
Okay.
They ask, okay, so I'm pretty sure doubts aren't allowed here, per se, but this is actually holding me back, so sorry. I'm having the following problems. One, who the hell is you? Like, Shakespeare is writing, R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, this to commemorate someone, but is that someone else, himself in the third person, the kinds who try to make these monuments, or the fair lord, as Gradesaver says? Gradesaver.
Gradesaver.
And two, the last line, dwell in lover's eyes. Mm-hmm. Is it open to interpretation? Or is it something literal? Thanks! So what this question asker does not tell us that I gave you the heads up on before is that we are referring to Sonnet 55 here.
Sure. So, and that is the extent of the heads up that I've received.
Yes, but referring to not marble nor the gilded mountains.
Sure.
Monuments. He wrote mountains, it's monuments.
It's definitely monuments.
I indulge me. Perhaps I will read the sonnet so we are all on the same
page.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
Okay, great. And it'll buy you some time to think about.
I'm ready.
Of course you are.
The sonnet's its wheelhouse.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm. Not marble nor the gilded monuments of princes shall outlive this powerful rhyme, but you shall shine more bright in these contents than unswept stone besmeared with sluttish time. When wasteful war shall statues overturn and broils root out the work of masonry, nor Mars his sword nor war's quick fire shall burn the living record of your memory. Against death and all oblivious enmity shall you pace forth. Your praise shall still find room, even in the eyes of all posterity, that wear this world out to the ending doom. So, till the judgment that yourself arise, you live in this, and dwell in lover's eyes. That's Sonnet 55.
Sonnet, well done.
So,
yeah.
This is what's holding our buddy Redditor Cool12Y. Who the hell is you, Dan?
Fair youth.
Tell me more about that.
So this is in the Fair Youth section of the sonnets. If you've listened in the past or if you know much about the sonnets, the three main characters outside of the poet, Shakespeare, are the Fair Youth, the rival poet, and the Dark Lady. The Fair Youth sonnets take up sonnets 1 through 126, I want to say. It's pretty deep.
Yeah.
And then like the rival poet appears towards the middle to end of that section, and the Dark Lady has the last 28.
Mm-hmm.
But this is basically in that whole series where the Fair Youth, who is the Fair Youth, is a question of great speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But basically it's someone that the poet Shakespeare is enamored with, and there's this whole line where it's like basically the youth is not having babies.
Okay.
Or he's not just like reproducing.
Mm-hmm.
And Shakespeare's like, you gotta have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So this has all start off. But in this section, basically he's saying, you know what? Things are going to get ripped down. This is also in the period where with the churches being whitewashed and all the Catholic monuments being ripped out.
Right.
That sense of things being this line about wasteful wars shall statues overturn and broils root out the work of masonry. He's saying like, yeah, we're going to rip down all of these physical things, but I can recreate you forever in this poem.
Yeah.
So that's who he's talking to.
There you go. So that's that, or the fair lord, as Gradesaver says, fair youth, the more on brand.
Yeah, the fair lord I've never heard.
Yeah, neither have I.
I think the fair youth is pretty much accepted in the Shakespeare circles we run.
So, established Shakespeare circles.
And to be fair, they probably wrote fair youth on Gradesaver. And this guy who thinks that monuments
is mountains.
Is mountains.
Yeah.
Or this girl, whoever it is. Cool, 12 wide. Dude, does that mean I'm picking up from that this is a senior?
Because like 12 year? Cool 12, maybe.
Which is terrible.
I doubt. I mean, or they were just born on the 12th. Their 12 is their lucky number. 12 is their hockey number.
Okay, that's cool.
And then part two, the last line, dwell in lover's eyes, is it open to interpretation? My understanding is no. There is no room for interpretation.
Well,
in the sonnets.
Definitely not in poems.
And
no.
It's literal. It is literal. You literally are, anytime there is a lover's eye, that is where you inhabit.
Right. You have a house.
In somebody's eyeball.
A penthouse. An eye apartment.
Is that a pun?
No. It's just it's what it would be. Because the eyes are like towards the top of the body.
Mm.
So it would be like a penthouse apartment.
Mm. Like a Statue of Liberty situation.
It was a great
Ghostbusters
view.
2, Statue of Liberties type
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly.
Statue of Liberties. So dwell in lover's eyes, or is it open to interpretation? Yes, of course it is, you idiot. Of course it's open to interpretation. Dwell in lover's eyes, right, it's what you were saying before, that the sentiment that he's putting through here in this sonnet makes the subject immortal, because
yeah.
we're still talking about this fair youth 400 years later, whereas, you know,
right.
about how he lived in an eyeball.
Right, right. There are a couple of things to dig in on the word I
mm-hmm.
in a Shakespearean context, which are different than for a modern audience. The eyes would have been the doorway to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
So that sense of love passed through the eyes.
Okay.
Was a real common thought back then. Like, that was how you, it wasn't like the sense of like our hearts met. Like, that wasn't really a thing. It mm-hmm. was the souls passing through the eyes.
Huh.
So to say dwell in lover's eyes is basically to say to dwell in the deepest part of your heart.
Right.
So that can get lost in translation. The less romantic eye is, could be an innuendo, sexual innuendo. There could be some bawdry.
Sure, the one eye.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. No?
I think it's the other.
Oh, the eye of Sauron.
The eye, yeah, mm-hmm. okay. Are we bleeping this?
I don't know. That's not my joke, so I feel more comfortable.
Who is this at?
That's a Skippy Smith joke.
Skippy! Mm. All right, Skip.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, that could be, if this is, you know, we think sonnets, we think like, oh, sweet love poetry. But there also could be some, I suppose you could argue, there could be like, the body Shakespeare crowd would argue like, oh my,
mm-hmm.
you forever will dwell in a lover's eye? Like, mm-hmm.
wow. Oh, I see.
Sexy time.
I see. Well, one could say that determination is open to interpretation.
Indeed.
So there you go, Redditor, Cool12Y. You're welcome for assuaging your doubts. Now, hopefully you can get back to work and slash getting on GradeSaver to write the rest of your essay.
Slash!
Okay, let's go do some everyday shakes.
Okay.
This is the section of the show where we pull a phrase from Shakespeare and show you how to use it in your everyday conversation. This week's phrase is men's eyes were made to look and let them gaze, as featured in Act 3, Scene 1 of Romeo and Juliet. Let's hear the phrase in context. I pray thee, good Mercutio, let's retire. The day is hot, the Capulet's abroad, and if we meet, we shall not scape a brawl. Oh, by my head, here come the Capulets.
By my heel, I care not.
Follow me close, for I will speak to them. Gentlemen, good den. A word with one of you.
And but one word with one of us. Couple it with something. Make it a word and a blow.
You shall find me apt enough to do that, sir, and you will give me occasion.
Could you not take some occasion without giving?
Mercutio, thou consort'st with Romeo.
Consort? What, does that make us minstrels? And thou make minstrels of us. Look to hear nothing but discords. Here's my fiddlestick. Here is that shall make you dance. Zounds, consort.
We talk here in the public haunt of men. Either withdraw unto some private place and reason coldly of your grievances, or else depart. Here all eyes gaze on us.
Men's eyes were made to look, and let them gaze. I will not budge for no man's pleasure, I.
Well, peace be with you, sir. Here comes my man. That was Men's Eyes Were Made to Look and Let Them Gaze, yeah. As featured in Act 3, Scene 1 of Romeo and Juliet. Dan, you want to give us some context?
Oh, yeah. So this is the turning point in the play. We're setting up towards the great tragic moment where Mercutio is 86th from the play.
86 Mercutio,
push the bavette. So basically, we are, Romeo has married Juliet. It is the moment when Tybalt is calling in his debt, basically calling in the sense that he's going to ruin Romeo for showing up at their party. Benvolio and Mercutio are like hanging out in the streets waiting for Romeo. It's hot. Benvolio is basically, can we just get out of here? Something bad's going to happen. And Mercutio is just like looking for the fight. And basically, Tybalt comes in and is like, I'm looking for Romeo. And Mercutio's like, want to go? And Tybalt's like, no, this is not with you. I'm looking for Romeo.
Right.
And then he has the line of Benvolio is thinking about what the prince said. But like, if any more public brawls and you're all screwed. And he's like, guys, everyone can see us here. And Mercutio is basically like, let them watch.
Right.
So that's some context for this.
There you go. So Men's Eyes Were Made to Look and Let Them Gaze. Yeah, I think it's what you just said, that it's the easiest application is let them watch. I don't care.
Right.
And it's like the first thing that this made me actually think of is Cleopatra.
Oh, interesting.
You know, that it's like all those scenes, you know, Antony and Cleopatra fresh in my brain. But there were all those scenes where they are in public having these very personal discussions. And it's like, do you want to... You want to talk about this somewhere else? And she's like, no, I'm right. Cleopatra. They can listen.
Right.
You know, I don't care. It's like, you know, it's, you know, celebrities in TMZ and they're just like going, you know, they get in the limo, they get out of the limo, they go into the restaurant. It's not when they don't have like the hoodie up and the sunglasses on, when they just like act as if there aren't 30 people taking their picture right now. You know? All right. Let them.
Right.
Let them gaze.
When you get to that point in the celebrity relationship where they can just walk hand in hand and be like, yeah, we're a thing.
Right, exactly.
Go ahead, tweet about me.
Exactly. Trend me.
Right. Yeah, it really is when you generally DGAF and you're just like, you know what, screw it. I spent too much time caring.
Yeah.
And now I just don't care.
Right.
It's also, you know, that sense of dance like no one is watching. That,
sure.
That phrase. I've had some times on the dance floor where I'm like, you know what? Screw it. Here we go. Uh-huh. I'm just dancing and be like, what are you doing? It's like, men's eyes are made to look and let them gaze. I'm doing the worm, baby.
Oh, yeah.
And then basically a face plant. But like, there's a video out there somewhere on the deep, dark parts of the interwebs of a wedding I was at where the groom came up at like 10:30. We were done at 11 and was like, all right, boys. And I was in the party, the wedding party. And he's like, we're all going out there. We're cutting loose for the last half hour. Let's like drive this thing home. And I was like, Braveheart, like, yeah. And then they all just like held back. And I just went like boldly out. I was like,
you got strung out.
But the video is great. And I, you know what? Men's eyes are made to look and let them gaze. That video is awesome.
I can't wait. We'll find it. Somebody find it and put it on our on the
I know,
Facebook.
I know where it is. But if you guys can find it, good luck.
To take this in another direction, there's one of the better negotiating tactics that I've learned in my life on the other side of the table, as it were.
Yes.
Is I had a boss whose whole, like, basically, she was very comfortable in silence.
Sure.
So it's like a lot of a negotiation is, you know, someone's like, well, I need this. And the other person says, well, you know, I can't. We could do this. Like, we could do that. The other thing. She'd just be like, we're going to do this. And then just stare at you. And not in like an intimidating way. It was in a very casual way. Hmm. And then you're just sitting there and you're like, your instinct is to say something to like fill in the gap. And you're like, well, I guess we could do 10% less. Silence, 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 silence.
Interesting.
15? And then you start negotiating against yourself.
Yeah.
So the lesson I learned in talking to her about these types of things is, all right, 10. And then take a look. Men's eyes were made to look and let them gaze. I can sit here just as long as you can.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's That's bold.
Mm-hmm.
Takes some chutzpah.
Oh, yeah. It takes some gravity that I do not actually have, but she definitely did. I can aspire to have.
Right. I was trying to think of the sports correlation here. And the best example I can think of, I think, is if you have like a filthy curveball.
Uh-huh.
If you're a pitcher. And you're like, you know what?
Got him looking.
Men's eyes were made to look and let them gaze. Like, looks like a ball, and then it drops right in.
Mm.
Or it looks like a strike, and it's like bounces in the dirt.
Right.
Although that wouldn't get you looking. But it brought me down a great path of thinking about who the best curveballer of all time is.
Well, you have like Barry Zito's that lollipop. My favorite curveball.
Barry Zito. That's what I have written right here.
My favorite curveball of all time is David Wells' lollipop curve. I love that curveball. Just a big fat guy with a big 50-mile-an-hour
Jack Daniels soaked curveball.
I loved his curveball. But I don't know that would be the best one. It's just the most, like, the most character for a curveball.
Sure. I did a quick Grade Saver search to see who had the best curveball of all time, according to the internet.
Yes.
Sandy Koufax.
Yeah, it was a pretty good curveball, yeah.
I never saw Sandy pitch live, but...
No.
But Zito was number 8, so I'll take that.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Pedro, number 12.
I mean, and that was like his fourth pitch. I think what I've been wanting to say this whole time is this is just Shakespearean for... Drink it in, man.
I mean, drink it in, man. Also written right there.
That's it. I mean, Y2J Chris Jericho.
Friend of the pod.
Just, you know, getting out there and you're like, everybody wants to look. So everybody open that, get them gazers wide and drink it in, man.
Men's eyes were made to look at them gaze, man.
I don't know that one works as well. I don't know that that's going to go on a t-shirt, but, you know, you get the gist.
Good. The gist is there. It's definitely there. Wait, a question about hopping back for a second to Pedro, because...
Always.
You can always hop back
go
to Pedro.
On.
Was Pedro Martinez, was he consanguineous with Edgar Martinez?
No.
They were not?
No.
Not related?
No.
Blood related?
No.
Okay.
Ramon Martinez was...
Oh, that's the one.
Yeah.
No, not a good curveball.
Not as good as Pedro. No.
Oh, okay. Great.
All right. That's... You got anything else?
Just love Jericho. I am Jericho on Twitter. Friend of the pod.
All right. Plugs, corrections, banter.
We're here already.
Word of the week.
This is great.
I know. Can you believe it?
Can you believe it? We're riding in that... what's it called? The diamond HOV lane.
Right, the carpool lane.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does seem like it's been a while since we've been here, because it has been a while since we've been here.
Right.
This is the first time we've recorded in like a month, so.
That's true.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back. Yeah, we had the episode, the last regular episode was actually recorded, I think it was the first time we've done that, where we recorded an episode like 10 days in advance.
Right, because?
Because of epic amounts of travel.
Mm-hmm.
And also just epic amounts of work on both ends.
Yeah.
So it was just crazy. But it was cool to be out in San Jose,
mm-hmm.
Where I got to meet, I think probably a long time life friend who I didn't realize we were such good friends. I knew we were, I mean, we've always been good friends, but I didn't realize how great we were of friends. And it's my dear friend, Skylar Collins.
Uh-huh.
So it was great to see him. He came out. He got in a car accident on the way to rehearsal.
He was so excited to see you.
Well, this is how he endeared me forever. Was he sent me a text being like, in a car accident, sorry, running 15 minutes late. And I was like, I didn't think this happened on the West Coast. I thought people were like, I just show up when I want.
Yeah.
And then we had a break, and I was like, Skylar, is this how it works out here? And he's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, like, break, we're on a 10, and it's like, 24 minutes into our 10. Like, when are we starting? He's like, well, when do you want to start? I'm like, I'm just waiting for someone to call it. He's like, we're back. And I was like, Skylar. So Skylar really is a lifetime friend and an all-around great man.
And
As I've always known.
And also exciting to confirm exists.
Yes. And I thought, I was concerned at one point that he may just like walk in and stab me.
Uh-huh.
And didn't. He was very nice, very, very kind man.
That's the house wins on that one.
It is. So hopefully we'll see him in April. Big market tease.
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe.
Interesting. Another friend of the pod we got to meet this month was MP Pilch.
Yeah, MP Pilch.
Also a real person, which was fun.
Right.
To find out he came up to participate in the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company's Shakespeareans production of Antony and Cleopatra. So we got to hang out with him for the day.
Yeah.
And that was great.
He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He is phenomenal. MP, I know you're listening. You're phenomenal, man.
And yeah, when I was talking to him before, he's like, yeah, I can't remember the last time I acted. And I'm like, cool thing to bring to our attention now. Could have been brought to my attention yesterday.
He killed it.
He was great.
He absolutely crushed it in the Beerians, which was directed brilliantly, I may say, by @FearStrikesOut on Twitter, Kevin Condardo.
It was directed. So I have another thing that I actually meant to put in the banter last time, a month ago.
Yes.
But there was the question, we did the dual question about how I was a 2-time Most Likely to Succeed award winner.
Yeah.
And what that actually was inspired by was I got an actual honest-to-goodness letter in the mail from Miss Wing, my 8th grade middle school English teacher, who was one of my... who was actually the teacher who kind of got me out of my shell and made me comfortable with making an ass out of myself in front of people for entertainment for me in addition to others.
Sure.
And so she sent me a letter about, you know, a couple things, but also she included, and I had forgotten that this happened, for our high school newspaper at graduation, I wrote a sonnet about graduating from high school.
Do you have the sonnet?
I do have the sonnet. I have not read it.
This is the time.
Yes. Oh, I know. But I have just I wanted to share that with you bard flies out there.
This is amazing.
What a 17-year-old Kevin decided to write and it was just like, you know, it was a poetry page on the paper.
Amazing.
And I elected to write a sonnet about the most important moment in anyone's life, graduating high school.
Well, yeah, of course. This is going to be phenomenal.
Okay, so I have the paper right here.
We've discussed on banter before, this is a section of the program which is completely unscripted, and we're both finding things out fresh and in the moment.
Live. Yeah.
As it happens. Do you want to read the sonnet?
Yes.
Or may I give it a pass?
Ooh.
Having never seen it. And
yeah,
channel the words of 17-year-old Kevin Condardo.
Yes, I turned 18 on graduation. I wrote this as a 17-year-old. So for context for me, I got this letter. I was like, what is this extra Xeroxed piece of paper?
Yes.
I opened it up. I saw what it was. Immediately had a 15-year-old memory be like, I know exactly what that is. And then I folded it back up and I have saved it for this moment. So,
So you haven't read it?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I know it is a sonnet that I wrote for high school graduation, but I don't know what I wrote.
Okay. All right. Let's see what happens. I feel like I'm opening a magic book, like the Indian in the cupboard.
Right.
Where it's like, okay. Oh, this is typed out.
Oh, it was in the paper. Oh. I'm published. It's no big deal. Okay, good. Dan is laughing.
Untitled.
Oh, of course.
What a pretentious
You will. As you like it. Whatever. Untitled. Also, untitled is in parentheses. I'm like, eh.
Well, the title is untitled.
The title, open parens, untitled, close parens, by Kevin Condardo.
What a dick.
In classrooms, we have labored without rest through lecture, quiz, and workbook. We have fought. At home, the work is an unwelcome guest who burgles time and occupies our thought. The final bell allows just few to leave to field or stage or bus. We quickly fly. We work so hard in order to achieve success. Yet failure always lurks nearby.
I mean, for some, not for me.
The company of friends can bring some joy. To see them highlights stressful weeks and days. But sometimes friends can anger and annoy. They know just how to make emotions blaze.
Yeah.
Is that a weed reference?
No.
But as diplomas cross and caps ascend, we all will mourn this era's sudden end.
Yeah.
Holy
Thank you, Dan. Dan, head and hands. What
bleak.
What a ray of sunshine 17-year-old Kevin Condardo was.
It's like you didn't see graduation coming, like the sudden end. Like, although I guess that is true, right? Like you're in school with these people for 4 years, or possibly 12.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, also now you're all going to different states.
And you'll see like five of these people ever again.
Right.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's a pretty good sonnet published in The Catalyst. No big deal.
Oh, well. I mean, that was an honor to read.
Well.
Thanks for letting me do that.
Of course.
This is heavy matters. I like success, yet failure always lurks nearby, as we've discussed in our sonnet analysis in the pod. That's in line number 8. So you're heading right into that turn.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant. I mean,
I'm a natural. I had no idea. I knew nothing about any. Like I knew what the form was. So it all just comes naturally to me, the same way it did for Shakespeare.
Petrarchan. You know? It's nice.
Mm.
Burgles is a great verb.
Great word.
Really, really wonderful. Mm. I don't understand the line. Maybe you can help me understand the line. But sometimes friends can anger and annoy. Mm.
It rings as true now as it did then.
Can you help me unpack that? Oh, is that about Liam?
I didn't know Liam yet.
The Boston Angler.
But I knew he was coming. I knew I would know him in 6 months. So that's what that was about. Yeah.
So I do have some questions about your punctuation.
I haven't seen it.
Well, I'll tell
this
you
is
now.
This first folio, so.
Sure. In that sonnet, there are two commas and one period.
Love it. We're in a hurry.
I'm going to pass this over to you and just take a peek at that punctuation and help me figure it out.
Oh, yeah. I'm missing some stuff in here. This is all one sentence. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is. It's just one sentence. Well, you know what? I didn't have an editor to get in there on this.
Where's Tommy C at?
It's not aligned. I know, right? Get him on the phone. Not aligned correctly. It's raw.
It's untitled.
It is.
Open parens. Untitled. Close parens.
I probably left it untitled. Capital. I was waiting for a sponsor.
And this is my sonnet, TD Bank. Oh, God. How do you follow that? I have no idea. I was mentioned on Twitter this week by our dear friend and former fan of the podcast, B. Wesenius, who has gone into hiding, apparently, despite numerous times we've called her out.
I believe she's getting like a PhD in engineering and some. You're not impressed by an
a PhD?
They can't maybe a master's.
Get her a master's. Wait, what?
Well, as a master's holder who also was a published poet, it does take a lot of time. So I understand.
Oh, I hate. B. Wesenius mentions that she rewatched Moonlight last night. And let me tell you, Andre Holland is never going to be able to work through the Bard's canon fast enough. Which goes on, there's a whole litany of tweets back and forth between Clear Shakespeare, who's at Clear Shakes on Twitter, and B. West, and Isaac Butler, who is at Parabasis? P-A-R-A-B-A-S-I-S.
Parabasis.
Parabasis. Basically saying like what roles he should play.
Uh-huh.
And then they're talking about like the beauty of Cassius versus Brutus and how Cassius is a better part, but Brutus is like more recognized.
Uh-huh.
And B. West goes on to say, oh no, Clear Shakespeare says it's the Edmund Edgar problem. Edmund is more fun and maybe better, but you need an Edgar for the play to work. And B. West says, and only at Dan Bonos thinks Edgar is more fun. So I would like to reword that tweet with a simple and only at Dan Bonos is right. I think that would be great.
I mean, we can suggest the emendation.
I would like to suggest said emendation, B. West. I know you're tired pursuing your BA or whatever it is you're getting. But from the original BA at Dan Bonos, I'm right.
Great.
Edgar
wonderful.
Is great.
Okay. We are into our weigh-in. We haven't weighed it. We will weigh in tomorrow for our first milestone in the Slim Down for the Grand World Tour. World Tour Extravaganza. Drink it in, man. And so...
Men's eyes are magically looking at them, guys.
The best part of this so far is, A, Dan's going to miss this bookmark, this benchmark, I'm pretty sure.
I'm definitely going to miss the first week.
But teachers...
I'm drinking two beers right now.
Several teachers have already sent in questions that are, to be clear, horrifying essays. Yeah. Like...
What was it that you, Pitts Lancaster, said that we have to write? We have to write in?
I started to look at it, and then I just decided I'm not eating until Memorial Day. That was my reaction to it.
I have to live with him. He's going to be cranky. He's going to be upset. I'm going to come in eating DiGiorno's, and he's going to like just stab me and throw it away.
I mean, and it's also like to, you know, as a published author, to do one of these papers would just really ruin it for the high school kids who have to actually, you know, they're like, how can we compete with that?
How kind of you.
But one other question that came out of another conversation that I'm curious about, well, A... teachers, keep sending in your essay questions
to
please. Fear me into not eating.
The questions are great. I'm actually eating more because I just want to take a crack at them.
I love it. Angling. But we're also curious what... we were having this conversation. We weren't sure of the answer, and we have a wonderful resource here to find out. What plays are you teaching?
Right.
Because, you know, we know what we studied in, you know, eighth grade to senior year of high school, but high school teachers... Which of the plays are you teaching in your curriculum?
Yeah.
Tweet at us at No Holds Barredcast and let us know, just for our curiosity.
Especially if you're outside of the big four high school plays.
Which
I would say are Romeo and Juliet, Julius Caesar, Macbeth, and Hamlet.
Right.
Those are, I think, the big four high school.
But those are the ones that we did, yeah.
Yeah. But what else is out there?
Yeah.
What else are you teaching?
Yeah.
Speaking of high school teachers and the weigh-in, Meg Doughty, who is at Doughty Meg on Twitter, tweets, at Dan Bonos, at Fear Strikes Out, at No Holds Barredcast. Regarding the latest pod, how about instead of writing essays, you have to help me chaperone prom?
Do we know where Meg is?
She's in Maine.
Where
Vacation
in Maine?
Land, the way life should be.
Like Kittery or like Old Orchard Beach?
I don't know. I know it's Maine. You know, I've always said, people ask, like, how many proms did you go to? And I will say, like, 9 so far.
Ugh. Yeah, and then the court is, like, 9.
9 years for you, sir. That's cool.
Yeah, Dan is definitely not allowed to chaperone legally.
Yeah, so I'm actually not allowed to, but Kev, you're available, I think.
It depends where in Maine they are.
I'll get you there. I want pictures. I want the whole shebang. You can read the poem, you can read the sonnet.
Oh, my God. You think they'd let me?
I think they would.
I'm available for, like, commencement speakers.
Oh, God. And also, you buy one, get one. A quick little BOGO. You get me for prom, you get me for commencement as well.
Yeah, it's a winner.
I always thought prom and commencement went hand in hand anyway.
I think that's a different C verb that you're looking
for.
Oh,
my bad. I have a conspiracy theory.
Hit me. Ow, fuck you, it'd be really hard.
That was a left hook.
I didn't think you were going to really... Okay, what? What is it?
Have we talked about in the pod what you do in photos? When people get picture, when you get a picture taken of you with others, your approach to these photos?
Me, Kevin Condardo?
Yes.
I do not think it's come up on the pod, no.
Is that something we can talk about?
Yeah, of course.
Or is that something you like to hold in your... How would you describe this?
So it's something I've been doing to my brother for our entire lives, where my brother is probably 2 inches shorter than me. Like he's shorter, but not significantly. But in every picture we've ever taken, I put my arm over his shoulder. It's like on 3, 1, 2, and then at 2 3/4, I go up on my tiptoes. So in every picture, I look like I'm 6 inches taller than he is. So when you look back on it, it's like, wow, I didn't realize Kevin was so much taller. And it's like universal. And then I also do it like, you know, at work when we do company photos where it's like 30 people on the set and everyone that's there. And I'm always on tippy toes. And like there are guys that are like 6 inches taller than me. And I'm like a shade shorter than them in the pictures. And they're like, wow, he's really tall.
Interesting.
So yes, that is something that I do.
So my conspiracy theory related to the pod is that I watch you spinning these levels while I'm talking.
Yes.
And basically the microphone is like in my mouth.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering if you'd turn me down.
No. I actually got psyched out this week because I thought that our sound was pretty good. It's been applauded by iTunes reviewers far and wide.
Great.
But Tommy C told me that you're too quiet and I'm too loud.
Oh.
And so now I'm hyper vigilant about it. Because now with our awesome new recording equipment that we are able to have, because of your support on Patreon, we mix it live.
Yes.
So I'm trying to mix it while I'm also talking. So it's a learning experience.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I hear it when I'm, like, walking to the train, and I'm, like, I'm constantly doing the, like, wait, wow, am I speak that softly?
Yeah.
But I just don't think that I really do, but I can't quite figure it out.
Well, what, you have a habit of, like, going like this.
You
wander away from the mic. You don't have the laser-like focus of a published poet like me to stay, like, right in on it.
Oh, God, I hate it. Anyway. I will do better from now on to make sure I get really
okay,
right.
Okay, good. That's wonderful. So, right, it is a work in progress with our sexy new equipment that we got through our Patreon at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. As a reminder, if you donate $3 a month, just $3 a month to help out the show, you'll get one of our 12-night cards next January and also access to other special benefits, of which we don't have any at the moment because we don't know what people want, but we would be happy to do stuff if people give us ideas to do stuff.
Yeah.
For bonus Patreon, $3 a month.
We'll have those.
Bonus club.
We'll have bonuses coming out, rolling out monthly starting in the summer. At the latest.
Oh, I like that. That's news to me. You heard it here first. Can't wait to see what that's going to be.
Fingers are crossed.
Yeah, right. If you don't have the means or the interest in supporting us financially but still want to help us out, you can do so by giving us a rating and review on iTunes so that we can try and keep a foothold in the top 200 performing arts podcasts. We got three new reviews this week.
From whom?
User Gwalp wrote, "These guys are great. If you like Shakespeare, love Shakespeare, kind of sort of like Shakespeare, or need convincing to like Shakespeare, then you should take time to pause and give this pod a shot.
Nice job, Gwalp.
I'm a high school English teacher who teaches Shakespeare, and these guys give me new ideas and have even made me want to read the plays I have somehow avoided. Support them on Patreon, and they will send you a hysterical 12-night card." It's true. On brand.
Great review. Nice job, Gwalp.
User DDNLA writes, "This is a phenomenal podcast for both Shakespeare fans and folks who still have nightmares and flashbacks of high school English class." Mm. I have glorious dreams of high school English class.
Wet dreams about high school English class.
Oh, wow. Fun, funny, and yet not invited to the prom. Fun, funny, and dare I say even educational. A must listen if you are going to see a Shakespeare play you may not be familiar with or just want to show off your expertise to friends and family. And finally, user Jay Owaskowitz writes,
"Who's that?
I don't know. It's a pseudonym." "Between the two astute and caustic hosts, I honestly can't say who's pithier. They offer, through their jocund jibes and roasts, a masterclass on stichomythia. But Dan and Kevin do more than allay the boredom of the bard's reluctant reader. They unpacked layered readings of each play and mine the relevance of verse and meter. A fun and expert take on Shakespeare's words is what you'll find when you befriend the pod. So hit subscribe, ye literary nerds, and join their coterie /#squad. Now, earbuds in, begin. Hey, nonny, no, you've only 90 episodes to go."
Is that a sonnet?
It is.
Jay Owaskowitz.
Bringing the thunder.
Whoa.
Yes.
Big shout out to Jay Owaskowitz.
So, I mean, you could do that for a review, or you could literally just give us 5 stars and say, "Great pod."
I like the sonnet, though.
Okay, let's see some more pods. Let's see some more sonnets.
Let's see some more sonnets.
On the review. So right now we have a leader in the clubhouse on the sonnet front.
Jay Owaskowitz, I'm guessing. I don't know who this person is, obviously.
Sure.
But if I had to guess, that's a high school English teacher.
You think?
I think.
Okay.
I think with that robust vocabulary, really separating himself from all those other reviewers.
Mm-hmm.
Subscribers?
Separating
from the other reviewers, at least. Subscribers are out there who could write similar sonnets but haven't yet.
Oh, I don't think there's anyone that could write a better review than that.
Probably not. Everyone else is just lazy, stupid, bag loggerheads.
Maybe too far.
My bad.
Okay, cool. So,
sorry, it's that second beer.
You knocked out. You got anything else?
No.
All right, neither do I. Word of the week, I don't know, what was it?
Loggerheads, I just said it.
I hate you.
What
was the phrase I so astutely penned? Sometimes friends can anger and annoy. They know just how to make emotions blaze. Very prescient.
Yes. Prescient. Word of the week. Prescient.
Loggerhead. Anyways, keep in touch with us until next time. You can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/noholdsbarred. You can follow us on Twitter at noholdsbarredcast, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/noholdsbarredcast. So, on behalf of the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, oh, shoot, we forgot to share. We actually came up with another new idea during the pod where what we're going to do... the public's going to do that too. Okay, cool, never mind. We'll try harder next time. Till then, my name is Kevin.
I am me. When I forget this bit, it makes me pee.
Adieu, adieu, adieu. Adieu, 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 adieu.